Hi, I'm Angela Rule, and you're listening to Noongar Radio.
And you're listening to the Law Matters program. Hello and welcome to the show for another fortnight. Jodie Hoffman with you for the next hour. I hope you can stay tuned. This program comes to you every couple of weeks by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. And it's great to have your company wherever you're listening in, whether it's in and around Kalgoorlie or down in the southwest of WA at Albany. I know community radio down there is now playing this show, which is fantastic. Hello to all our mates up in Fitzroy Crossing, around listening in through Wonky Radio, and of course nationally across the country via the National Indigenous Radio Service. Well, this time a fortnight ago, we had the Chief Justice of Western Australia, Wayne Martin, in the studio with us for the whole program, chatting about his last 12 years in the role as Chief Justice. And he only had a couple of days to go within that post. And today, the news that a new appointment has now been made, and we can let you know that Peter Quinlan, SC, has been appointed as the new Chief Justice of Western Australia, following on from the retiring Wayne Martin. He's the 14th Chief Justice in this state, so congratulations, Peter Quinlan, SC, new Chief Justice of Western Australia. Coming up this hour, we're going to be finding out all about a conference that is happening in Perth in September. It's called Women in Prison and Einstein's Definition of Madness, Doing What Doesn't Work Over and Over and Over. My guest will be Robin Westgate, joining us, very involved with the conference. It looks fascinating, and I'm sure a lot of you will be interested in heading along to it. It is in September at the University of WA Club, so stay tuned. Robin chatting with us a little later this hour. But before that, we're heading to Albany in our southwest, where we're going to be chatting with Glenn Colbung. He's very well known within the Noongar community here in Western Australia. He's the vice chairperson of the Aboriginal Legal Service Executive Committee, representing the southwest region. We're going to talk about a few things. We're going to touch on, but not focus too heavily on, the racist Facebook rant by a currently serving WA police officer. It's received a lot of media attention, and rightfully so. We're going to talk with Glenn about that and what sort of ripple effect that has within the community when they hear about such vile posts. Glenn's also going to be giving us a bit of a history lesson about wonderful achievements by our mob throughout Western Australia. So I hope you can stay tuned. This is Law Matters, brought to you by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia. And many of you may be aware that a WA police officer is under investigation over claims that he posted racist comments at in response to a protest by Aboriginal people to change the date of Australia Day. Well, these rants were only exposed in recent weeks, ironically coming 2 weeks after WA's Police Commissioner Chris Dawson apologised to Aboriginal people. So the timing was a nightmare. The content was horrific, vile, very racist, and really quite disturbing that it came from a serving police officer. Glenn Colbung is on the board of the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, represents the southwest region, and he joins us from Albany. Glenn, welcome to the program. How are you?
I'm good, thanks, Jodie.
Glenn, look, I know that many people around the state have been talking about these rants. They were very uneducated and uninformed. It's very disturbing in nature, but also just the lack of knowledge that the person who wrote these posts has about the contributions of our mob. It was, you know, it was implying that, you know, we always got our hand out, we're bludgers, this and that. It's a long way from the truth, isn't it?
Absolutely. People need to understand that Aboriginal people right across the country played a major role in the clearing and development of this land. It's been said that the cattle industry up north has been developed on the back of the Aboriginal stockmen. Well, the farming industry right across the southern parts of Australia has been developed by the hard work of the Aboriginal people. And I know personally, as a kid growing up in the southwest, that when the farmers got bulldozers to come and knock the trees over, it was the Aboriginal people who had to pull those trees together on the ground and burn and clear that land. And they did that basically just for food money. It was hard work, and as a little kid, I know that personally, that my parents did it, and so did a lot of uncle and auntie.
Glenn, you're a very staunch Noongar fella, representing the Southwest region on the ALS board. You're from Albany. Tell us what it's like growing up in and around Albany.
You have always had those racist sort of feelings out there from other people, and basically you just had to get on. You know, you had to get on and do what you had to do, and. I know, as I said, our families were hard-working families, the Noongar people, and played a major role in developing this country. But, you know, even when we played football, there was a racist sort of element there.
What feedback do you get from community? Because I know you're very active in the community, Glenn, and you sit on various boards, and I know we've pulled you out of a meeting that's on at the moment to join us here on Law Matters. What sort of feedback do you get from the community when you're speaking with them about things like this racist Facebook post by a serving WA police officer?
Well, there is a lot of concern out there because particularly up north in the... Goombulgari Forest River area, where as late as 1926, which is not all that long ago, there was a big massacre up there. Now, Aboriginal people fought in all the wars, particularly in the, you know, the First World War, Second World War, and other wars, and yet fought in 1926, about 10 years after the end of the First World War, there was a huge massacre up in that area. So, and recent statements by this particular police officer sort of shows that there's not a hell of a lot has changed in that period of time.
So it's a real kick in the teeth, isn't it, for our mob who have contributed so much to the wealth of this state. I mean, if you look at some of the conditions of, you know, stolen wages, stolen children, stolen country, creating the wealth of this country for the colonisers, it's pretty damning, isn't it?
Well, it is, and the thing that really makes me angry is that... there is a perception out there that Noongar people or Aboriginal people in general are dole bludgers. We lined up outside of Centrelink for our dole checks. Nothing can be further from the truth because our people are workers. We've always been workers, you know. As far as employment, there's a huge number of Aboriginal people employed in all sorts of offices, legal service, medical services and other areas, but also a large number of Aboriginal people, and Noongar in particular, are working up north as FIFO workers. I know, for example, I've got at least 10 to 15 of my immediate family up there working. They go away from their family down Albany, Mount Barker and Bustling and these places for up to 2 weeks at a time. They are buying their own homes. They are paying up to over $30,000 a year in taxes. Now, they've got a right to ask, where is their taxes going? You know?
Yeah, definitely. Glenn Colbung is our guest. Glenn is on the board of the Aboriginal Legal Service in Western Australia, representing the Southwest region, a Noongar from Albany. What's important to you as a Noongar, Glenn, in terms of your involvement with the Aboriginal Legal Service, but also with the community? Because sometimes, I guess, you know, we feel that, you know, it's one step forward, two steps back when sort of racism rears its ugly head.
Well, I think what's important that on the board of the ALS, that we can develop a strong board that's committed to fairness and justice for Noongar Aboriginal people. And it certainly makes it harder when you've got people who've got no idea of what Aboriginal people have contributed over the years, and our involvement as far as I said before, clearing and developing this land, and to be painted basically with a brush that says, no, they're dollblazers, they're drunks, they're, and this sort of stuff, it doesn't go down well with me, because I don't drink and I don't smoke, I don't get involved with drugs, and I know there's a lot of other Aboriginal people out there exactly the same. We don't, you know, get involved with drugs and alcohol and or any of that stuff. And yet when we get people out there who more indicate, insinuating that we are, it doesn't go down too well at all.
No, it certainly doesn't. And I know that, you know, we do have a relatively new Police Commissioner in Western Australia, Chris Dawson. As I said, he did come out and apologise to Aboriginal people, which was, you know, leading from the top. Great to see. And I'm sure that he was as dismayed at these exposure of these rants that came out a couple of weeks later. And they are being investigated. That's the good thing. And we will keep our listeners informed on the outcome of that, because the police force and no workplace and nowhere in society really should harbour racism and racial vilification. So I think that it's really important that you've brought to attention, Glenn, a lot of those contributions. I feel it's something we could talk a lot about, and I know you don't have the time today, but I would love to touch base again in the future. And fascinating to think that, you know, you mentioned the massacres, you know, as recently as the 1920s, which is absolutely incredible, hey?
Absolutely, and there is a need for this sort of history, dark as it may be on the Australian, you know, the people of Australia. It's not so much the wider community, but these sort of things need to be brought out in the open. You can't continue to hide them, you know, behind the back door. You know, we look at all the good things that's happening in this country, but the things like massacres and everything else, it's more or less a taboo area. They don't sort of bring it out, and it needs to be brought out, because if we're going to talk about the history in this country, we need to talk about the whole lot. You can't pick and choose.
All right, let's take a rain check then and put that on the agenda for another program. What do you reckon?
Absolutely.
Good on you. Glenn, I know you've got to get back to that meeting. I do appreciate your time. I know it's a busy day for you in Albany, but thank you so much for your time and your views and a little bit of a history lesson for us all listening in, hey?
Well, I think it's well needed. You know, you talk to the wider community, probably 98% of them wouldn't have a clue as to what's happened in the past. And Australia will be a better place if we can educate the wider community. Yes, thanks, Jody.
Thank you, Glenn. We'll talk again soon.
Bye.
Glenn Colbung is the board member for the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia, representing the southwest region, a Noongar from Albany, and the vice chairperson of our board, and certainly contributes an enormous amount to the dealings of the Aboriginal Legal Service. And what a wealth of information. So I do look forward to chatting again with Glenn in the not too distant future. This is Law Matters. Jody Hoffman with you this hour. This is the Law Matters program here on Noongar Radio. Jody Hoffman with you. I hope to, I look forward to having your company for the rest of the program. I hope we can stay tuned. Coming up in a few minutes, I'm going to be speaking with a woman called Robin Westgate, who is involved in a conference that is coming up in Perth on the 27th of September called Women in Prison and Einstein's Definition of Madness, Doing What Doesn't Work Over and Over and Over. The Soroptimist International Where We Stand statement on criminal justice systems calls attention to the fact that despite reports dating back two decades calling for reform, women are still mistreated in criminal justice systems worldwide. Women are susceptible to criminal activities given their lower socioeconomic positions, less access to financial and social capital, and subjectation to numerous forms of stigma and discrimination. Women are often guilty of petty, minor and non-violent crimes. Yet despite these mitigating factors, the percentage of female prisoners is increasing more rapidly than that of males. Very alarming indeed. This is Law Matters here on Noongar Radio 100.9 FM. Great to have your company here in Perth, in Noongar country, but also around the country through the National Indigenous Radio Services and numerous community radio stations here in the West as well. Great to have you tuning in. And a really important conference coming up in Perth in a couple of months, 27th of September, in fact. And the conference is called Women in Prison and Einstein's Definition of Madness, Doing What Doesn't Work Over and Over and Over. One of the women involved in this conference is Robin Westgate, and she joins me on the line. Robin, thanks for your time. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm fine, and thank you for having me.
I tell you what, this is a very topical subject, women in prison, and the petty reasons that a lot of women are incarcerated for. And I guess we can't talk about things like that without referring to the absolute tragic case of the young Ms. Jew, who was incarcerated for unpaid fines, and of course the outcome was just a sheer tragedy, with her losing her life at such a young age. And this isn't a new thing, is it, Robin, where people are incarcerated, well, women are incarcerated for unpaid fines and petty crimes that takes them away from their family?
Definitely not. Women are usually incarcerated for non-violent offences, and there is no reason, really, if there's non-violence, why they can not be, particularly while they're on remand, released into the community. I passionately believe in alternatives to imprisonment for offences that don't include violence. And there are many, many alternatives available that offer the opportunity for the people to stay with family and community and still pay back society or pay the penance, but without ripping apart families and the centre of community, because that's what women are. You know, women are the centre of it, and when you rip them away, you will leave families bereft, you leave extended families bereft and put under huge pressure, and the community suffers terribly as well.
The conference is through Sir Optimist International. What is that?
Well, Sir Optimist is a service organisation of professional and business women who work towards trying to make things better for women. It's female-based. It's not marching down the streets feminism, but it's very strong on choice and positive aspects for women and girls worldwide. In WA, there are many groups based, you know, in different areas. And one of our main priorities at the moment is working with women in prison and in detention. And a lot of the small groups are doing small pop-up type services for women, like bags for being released when you're actually released from Bandyup. They're being provided with necessities. Because when you leave Bandyup, you're usually given a dental dam, a condom and a book about sexual health.
Yeah.
That's pretty much it. One of the groups is providing extra goodies to sort of get you on the street, you know, get you out. The Women in Prison group, which I'm speaking for, has been trying to work ways of improving things on a bigger picture now for several years, and this is actually their second forum.
Wow. Yeah, I saw that the first forum was held a couple of years ago, a small forum. I'm imagining that it's going to be a little larger this time. I've just got a vibe. But the Women in Prison Working Group is certainly such an important working group that's made up of three local Perth clubs, and you are representing that group at the conference. You yourself have an insight into the issues facing women in prison. Tell us about that, Robin.
Well, I hold academic qualifications in criminology and justice and sociology and history and adult learning and training. And the emphasis has always been for me on domestic and family violence and women in prison. The reason I started studying along these lines was because I was incarcerated, and I found myself in a situation I did not understand, and I was trying to make sense of what happened to me. And then I looked around me and I discovered that 90% of the women in prison, so 9 out of 10 women, are also victims of domestic or family violence or sexual violence. And I could not believe that, and I could not understand how women were being victimised over and over again. So I started looking into it, and I realised that I really wanted to begin advocating for women, but I knew no one would take me seriously. People would put me down and tell me I was just a whining, complaining woman and an ex-crim. Mm. And I figured by studying, one, I'd know more, but two, I'd have credibility.
Wow. So all of those academic qualifications you achieved while you were incarcerated at Bandy Up Women's Prison, and criminology, criminology and justice, sociology and adult and tertiary education, as well as training. It must have been empowering to a degree, being inside, but being able to gain all of that knowledge.
It saved my life, literally.
Really?
I was beyond suicidal. I did not want to be alive. But when I started studying, I discovered there was so much more to life and the world, and eventually to me. And I discovered that I was not as dumb as I'd been told I'd been all my life. I was reasonably intelligent. I had a passion for study. I still love research and digging around and finding out things. It gave me value, and it gave my life value. And there were incredible staff at the Education Centre. The Education Centre at Bandy Up is one of the lights of Bandy Up. And they supported me. They fought with me and for me, because I had to fight every step of the way to do that study. Every single unit had to be approved. All tertiary study has to be approved unit by unit. So I met this amazing support, and it literally gave me focus and took my mind off the fact that I was this disgusting thing that didn't have a right to be alive.
Wow. That's pretty powerful, Robin. My guest is Robin Westgate. We're talking about women and the criminal justice system, because there is a conference coming up in Perth in September, focusing on women in prison. And Robin, I'm imagining that with 17 years of your own life incarcerated, you got a first-hand insight into the key issues facing women behind bars. What were some of the familiar issues that were across the board that women were facing in prison?
Well, much of women's offending is based in disadvantage. So many of the women come from poverty or not very stable and comfortable living situations. Much comes from mental health issues. There's a very strong impact of domestic and family violence on women's offending, either being forced into it or having to feed an addiction, which is the only way they can cope with it. Sometimes it's all they know, because transgenerationally it may be what their parents or their uncles or their aunties, big brother and sister, it may be things that they've all done as well. So it just seems the norm. So right from the start, women are very disadvantaged. They're coming from this history of less. Women also in the justice system are usually treated either as a Madonna, someone to be put on a pedestal and worshipped, or a bad girl, a whore. And when a woman breaks the law, she loses status as being something to be admired. Mm. So society being how it is, they tend to treat women harder, because how dare you, you're not the stereotype we want to be able to hold up and say women are perfect. I mean, no one meets that standard, ever. And when you fail in any way, you're criticised far more strongly, because you've broken this completely impractical Madonna-type stereotype that no one gets to live up to. So they're treated harsher. Although we have equal rights, in many ways we have less rights. The law is written in such a way that it's usually around a man or an average man. The laws of self-defence were changed in 2008 because the laws related to two men facing up equally in a situation. And a woman can never do that with a man. Most men are bigger, stronger, so it makes it very difficult for a woman to claim self-defence in any type of situation. Mm. The law has been changed a little bit to cater for that.
Yeah.
But most law now still is about what a typical average man would do in a situation, not a woman.
Mm. When we talk about an increase in women being imprisoned for unpaid fines, non-violent crimes, I'm horrified to think of the effect that that has on the family on the outside. What did you see of that? And I guess that would have become very evident at family days and special events where family could attend the prison.
Well, at Bandyup, there is no such thing as family days. They're common in male prisons, but it's just not done. They're trying to work towards it and have been for some time. They have a child's Christmas party, one Saturday morning usually, leading up to Christmas. But although family days are quite a regular event now at male prisons, it doesn't happen at Bandyup.
That's incredible.
The visit centre at Bandyup is also considered the worst in the state, and that's been that way for 15, 18 years.
Can you describe it for us?
It's a small area. Often there's not enough room for all the visits that are booked, so unless you are early booking or your visitors are early booking, you miss out, particularly on weekends. They have increased the number of visit times, which is helpful. You have a small low table, not a normal table, one about shin height, and up to four plastic chairs around that. The prisoner sits on one side, the visitors sit on the other side, and even if there's three large adults, they all have to sit on the one side. As in most prisons, you're allowed to greet with a hug, but then you sit and you're not supposed to touch, and you know, you're not supposed to hold hands or console each other. Or the officers are exceptionally good in most cases. They do allow for that type of thing. But it is so crowded, you can hear clearly the next visit to you. If there's any incident, it's literally on top of you and your guests, which can be very scary. Your visitors are walked in. In most prisons, it's sort of like a no man's land. The prisoners come in from one side, the visitors come in from the other side. At Bandyup, it's not like that. You have to come in the main gate and then be walked down by a prison officer. You've got to wait till there's enough of a group to be taken to the visit centre. So you might be waiting 10 minutes. There's no extensions on visit times.
Mm.
And generally, it's just a very cold, unfriendly, very difficult place to sit and talk.
Mm.
And your visits are usually when you have to deal with things.
Yes.
So it's not family friendly and it's not visit friendly at all.
I want to talk about the recent Grenfell prison breakout as well, Robin, because I know that that highlighted concerns for a lot of female inmates in the regional prison, hey?
Very much so. I've spent time in prison and I cannot imagine the fear that must have been going through a lot of those women's minds as they were, one, aware of the fighting and the rioting, but also when it became obvious that people were going to break into their area, many women would have been thinking, hang on, I'm supposed to be safe here. What the hell do I do now? There have been reports of sexual assault. The police are investigating, but nothing more can be said about that yet because police are investigating. But I cannot imagine the fear that must have been going through those women's minds.
My guest is Robin Westgate, who is a member of the Women in Prison Working Group, made up of three local Perth groups, and joining us on the program today to talk about the role of Sir Optimist International and Women in Prison in the lead-up to a conference on the 27th of September in Perth at the University of WA Club entitled Women in Prison and Einstein's Definition of Madness, Doing What Doesn't Work Over and Over and Over. That is a long title, but I think we get the idea of what's coming up for this conference. Can you fill us in on what people could expect if they're thinking about going along to it?
Well, I hope they do. I think the whole topic of women in prison needs to be looked at on a much bigger picture because women in prison are usually quite demonised. one of my goals is to try and make people realise that not all women who've been to prison or who are in prison have horns and a tail. Most are mothers or grandmothers, sisters, daughters, and they have very strong, usually very strong family links and ties. Generally, when a man goes to prison, even a family man, there's usually somebody who will pick up the pieces and hold the family together. It could be a wife, it could be a grandmother, it could be an auntie, sister. And with no insult intended, when a woman goes to prison, there's usually not that same degree of support. So if a woman goes to prison and she has children, the children must either be scooped up very quickly by a family member or they go into care. That then puts huge pressure on the family member. There are a large number of grandparents raising children of women in prison. The woman who's being incarcerated may have a rental lease, whether through Department of Housing or a private rental, and their property is in their house, so who will take care of that? Many women lose everything when they go to prison because either someone will go and raid it or no one takes care of it, and then the landlord will remove the property. They're sort of entitled to, but if there was more support out there to help people to tidy up these sorts of things, because unfortunately there's nothing in prison to help you really do that. Once you're there, the outside world almost ceases to exist. You hand over your bank card and your phone and everything when you go in, and you have to hope that someone's going to be able to contact you, that you can help, you know, sort out to get them to try and sort out your personal effects, trying to find paperwork. You know, if you've got to, once you're in prison, perhaps you might have to provide ID, believe it or not, for something or other, and trying to find what has happened to your paperwork in that office, you know, or in your drawer at home.
How disheartening is it, Robin, to see how many women are in prison and the fact that in most or many instances the punishment certainly doesn't fit the crime?
That's a hard one. The law states that the punishment is legitimate. I personally find that very hard to believe, because how can you justify putting a woman in prison for, say, unpaid fines or even theft-type offences, driving without a licence-type offences, who may have three children who are then completely disrupted. They have their sole care or sole or main carer ripped away from them. They lose often where they're living. They have such a problem with being deserted that can last well into their adult life. There has to be, in my eyes, an alternative to some of these punishment issues that would cost the state much less than incarcerating somebody. Mm. And people who are in for a short time actually cost a great deal more money than people who are in for a long time, because they still have to have, even if someone's only going in for 10 or 12 days, they still have to have the entire assessment process done, which could take until they get out, but they still have to have this full process done. It's not like you can just park somebody and let them out 10 days later. Mm. The whole process must be followed, and that's what costs. The ideas behind imprisonment are either to punish or deter from future wrongdoing, and it sets the example for other people, to actually be retribution so society feels like they're getting justice and physically can be seen that the person will be suffering, or incapacitation so that they can't re-offend whilst they're in jail. But when you've got offences that are so small, you have to wonder how any of those theories fit into it. And when the system is so overcrowded and costing the state so much money, purely on a budgetary level, they would be far better off setting up systems where there were strict controls, not something weak and namby-pamby, but where you had to have community service or education and training. in replacement of just sitting in a cell for 10 days, 30 days to pay off a fine and losing just about everything, costing the state a huge amount of money, costing the woman and family a huge amount of money. For those who say that prison is necessary and we're all bleeding hearts, you look at it purely from a financial point of view, it makes far more sense to come up with alternatives to prison too.
And look, the stats for Aboriginal women being incarcerated is spiralling out of control, and that must have been very evident over your time there, Robin, that how many of Aboriginal women are incarcerated.
Well, according to the Australian Bureau of Statistics, the national average is 28% for Indigenous prisoners in Australia. But in Western Australia, it's a much higher, much higher figure. In Western Australia, we actually incarcerate Indigenous people, particularly women, at a far higher rate than any other state per head of population. The increases of the last 5 years of women in custody has increased by 53%, as opposed to 37% of men being incarcerated. The increase in Indigenous women is more like 65%. Those figures cannot be justified when a large proportion of the offences that these women are in for are small public order type offences, not major violent offences. Don't get me wrong, some offences need prison. I'm not an abolitionist. I believe that sometimes prison is the answer, but it needs to be a dignified incarceration, if that makes sense. And for the smaller ones, it needs to be something where there's actually some good comes out of it, whereas the costs of incarcerating women, and the costs cannot be measured against the evil or the bad or whatever you want to call it the woman has done. The costs are completely incomparable.
The conference is built around a couple of goals. One is improving the condition of women in Western Australian prisons, and the second is reducing the numbers of and preventing the entry of women in prison. The speakers will probe three key issues, including the lived experiences of women in prison, the drivers of incarceration of women, especially of Aboriginal women, whose situation has been described as a national crisis, and how we might more effectively bring about change. Who are the speakers at the conference, Robin?
We're bringing over Emeritus Professor Patricia Eastill from the University of Canberra. Patricia has been writing about women and the law and examining how women are treated in custody and detention for quite a long time. For her work, she was made Australian of the Year in the ACT in 2014, I think it was. And she has long stood and screamed that there must be alternatives to imprisoning women for these types of offences. She puts forward alternatives too. She talks about how women are treated by the law and how women are driven by the law to offending.
It's going to have a great turnout. I'm feeling very positive about this, and I know that groups such as the one you're involved in work very, very hard to make a change and a difference for women who are in prison. The Women in Prison group, is that something where members of the community can join or volunteer or find out more about?
It's one of the things we're trying to look at. We're trying to work out ways that people can become more involved in things like this. At the moment, it's people who are members of Soroptimus, but I'm sure we're quite open to people joining us and becoming more involved in other ways. There are always alternatives of what you can do and get how you can get involved. People do not realise let's be honest, most people are fascinated by crime and by prison. Most people, if they hear you've been in prison, they'll always ask you a couple of set questions and, you know, are the officers like the officers used to be in the old prisoner, and is it like this, and is it like this? So people are actually fascinated. When they find out that they are real women, they're real people with families, and they're real human beings who have stories and hearts that can be so badly damaged, they actually become quite interested and engaged and wanting to support. We're very open to that, and they can contact either myself through the contact details you've got or the other ladies who were contacts on that media statement, and we can definitely talk about ways that people can help. The other speaker is, main speaker is Hannah McGlade from Curtin University, who's going to be talking about basic human rights and Indigenous women. And Hannah's were very well known for her work in this area, and she herself is a shining example of standing up and fighting, particularly for Indigenous women in Western Australia. I'm very much looking forward to her presentation.
Robin, we are nearly out of time on the program, and I think we could keep talking, but the news isn't going to let us. Thank you for your time, and I know that we do have a lot of people who are behind bars who tune in to this station, and I'm wondering if you've got a message for some of the women listening in. I know that you said that you kept your strength through gaining your academic qualifications in a range of areas while incarcerated at Bandyup. What message of strength would you give to our women on the inside?
A lot of them would know me. Hang in there. Breathe. Don't react. I always said this. Think before you react, because overreacting gets a response, and what you want to do is stay calm, and you'll get a lot more for yourself and for others by doing that. So some of the best things about Bandyup are the women. Some of the worst things about Bandyup are the women. Remember that and stay strong for each other.
Robin, thanks so much for your time, Robin Westgate, and all the best in the lead up to the conference happening on the 27th of September. It's called Women in Prison and Einstein's Definition of Madness, Doing What Doesn't Work Over and Over and Over. I'll be putting all the conference details on the Aboriginal Legal Service of WA Limited Facebook page. So if you want to find out more, get to our Facebook page. All the contact details will be there for this very, very important conference focusing on women and the criminal justice system, happening again on the 27th of September at the University of WA Club. Robin, I hope it all goes well. It sounds like life's pretty busy for you, and I hope all goes well. It's been fabulous to chat with you today.
Thank you for having me.
Robin Westgate, and you know, the conference seems incredible. So do jump to the Aboriginal Legal Service Facebook page, or you can Google Soroptimist International and look at their events page and use the keywords women in prison and find out what is happening at that conference and whether it's something you'd like to go along to or not. Thank you for your company. Speaking of the ALS Facebook page, we also have an open letter by the Aboriginal Legal Service in response to those racist rants on Facebook by a serving member of the WA Police. Do check it out. I know it's had a lot of likes and shares, so take yourself to our Facebook page. It's updated regularly and keeping you up to date with a whole lot of important information that we want you to know about. From myself, Jodie Hoffman, enjoy the rest of your day. Take care. I look forward to your company again in a fortnight's time for more of Law Matters, brought to you fortnightly by the Aboriginal Legal Service of Western Australia.